gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 6 minutes after the hour. What?
Last day in New York. How sad.
Oh, boy. My move out of New York is looking like that oil pipe.
Yeah. So you had an underwater
robot hit the thing, yeah. And the cap came off. And the. All right. I will tell you about my Calamity Steph's life in just a couple of moments.
Wait a minute. There's more?
Oh, there's always more. 6 minutes after the hour, and yet we have a big, big show coming up on Mama's Last Day in New York. We have a fabulous edition of Face the Grayson coming up with Congressman Alan Grayson. Alyssa Binder, founder of Pet Airways, that Fred is flying on today. Max is flying on next week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, coming up. Richard Engel will be reporting for us live from Afghanistan, and comedian Sarah Benincasa. A big, big show.
Yeah, she has a
Mama's
new
Mama's playing hurt.
She has a new Wonket column that she was
yes,
about to tell
indeed.
Us about.
StephanieMiller.com is our little website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller. Oh, Rebecca is she still burning me an effigy out there?
Yes.
Yeah, I left her another message this morning. We'll talk about that in a moment. In the meantime, we...
Yeah, you get kind of long-winded in the morning, I must say.
Uh-huh. Oh, did you hear it?
No. I mean, you called me this morning, too. What you doing?
What you thinking about?
I'm dripping wet. I just got out of the shower. What?
Oh, you tease.
Uh-huh.
All right. Representative Ron Kind of the great state of Wisconsin, our close personal friend. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie. Good luck with the move. I hope it goes well.
It can't go much worse, Congressman. Let's put it that way.
Well, once you accomplish that, we're going to put you in charge of the oil gusher in the Gulf, so be ready.
Yeah, I broke my foot a couple of days ago, and I wish it had been kicking Tony Hayward's ass like you did. But
Right.
What, I mean, Congressman, let's talk. I mean, we'll a lot of stuff in the news to talk about, but let's talk about the oil spill. I mean, it almost, like, you just want to leave your head in your hands, right, when you hear the latest disaster. So, you know, yesterday, obviously, they had another, what shall we call it, a mishap?
Yeah, the bumping of the containment cap and trying to get that righted again. Obviously, what can go wrong seems to be going wrong with this gusher. But really, last week was very revealing. We had very important hearings on Capitol Hill, one of which all five of the major CEOs of the big oil companies came and testified, and all of them admitted that none of them had contingency plans to deal with a disaster of this magnitude. And none of them have the technological expertise in order to deal with what we're facing in the Gulf right now. So I agree wholeheartedly with the president that now is the time to take a deep breath and pause when it comes to deep water drilling. I know a lot of people are saying, no, let's just move forward, that this is one in a 100-year spill. But, geez, you know, when the CEOs of the big companies doing this type of drilling are admitting out in the open that they don't have any good plans to deal with this type of disaster, we better pause down and make sure we go through the proper safety checks first.
I'll say. I mean, I was watching this, one of your colleagues, Representative Pete Olson, Republican of Texas, and, so he's gone the legislative route, right, introducing a bill to lift the moratorium, saying, quote, this is turning a tragedy into a nightmare. He called it a job-killing policy. So then he's on Fox News. I don't know if you saw that. And Greta asks him if he can guarantee the rigs affected by the moratorium have been inspected and are safe. He, of course, dodged it, citing the history of drilling and the economy. I mean, I guess that's the argument, right?
Well, that's amazing.
Congressman,
yeah.
Is there going, oh, well...
Yeah, if they want to see a job-killing proposal, they just go have to tune on TV and look at this oil gushing out of the oil the well right now. That is destroying hundreds of thousands of jobs in the Gulf region. So this idea that, well, this was an anomaly, you know, we can just move forward with more deep-water drilling, the president's wrong in calling for a momentary pause so we can go back and review the safety plans, make sure there are viable contingency plans in place first before something like this happens is perfectly reasonable. And yet, it's amazing. Their disdain for this president, this administration, goes so deep that even the ranking member on Commerce, Joe Barton, was there apologizing to BP for this claim shakedown of the escrow account. And I'll tell you, some people who will not view this as a shakedown or a government overreach, and that's the people in the Gulf region who need this money because they're being devastated by it. And for him to come out and make those statements apologizing to BP, who, when BP themselves, Tony Hayward, said he doesn't view this as a shakedown. This is the company's responsibility to help the people in the region that are affected by this disaster, and they're completely off base. And it's not just Joe Barton. 100 Republican study committee members, 100 members of the Republican Party in the House also signed a letter describing this as a shakedown. And it's just mind-boggling. That's the, you know, the type of party that we're going to get if they happen to win these elections in November. One quick to defend a company responsible for the worst ecological disaster in our nation's history, rather than holding them responsible and making sure we fix this.
Well, I mean, and Congressman, you know, you raise a good point. It is not just Barton. And first of all, you know, they apparently the House Republicans, you know, have not yanked his position atop the Energy and Commerce Committee. They've backed off. He'll remain the, you know, the party's top lawmaker on the panel. And so you're right. This is the guy that's going to be in charge of energy policy. You know, if Republicans get the majorities, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He would be the one. He'd be primarily responsible for the oversight of the oil industry, and obviously you see where his comments landed, you know, what side he's on. He's on the side of the big oil gusher right now in the Gulf, rather than with the people in the Gulf that are being affected by all this. So it was a real sad commentary that their knee-jerk reaction to everything is blame our country, blame our government first, rather than holding the responsible party responsible, and that is clearly BP, and they are acknowledging that they're the ones responsible, and that's why they agreed to setting up this escrow account and work with the president, which I thought was significant, because now people in the Gulf can be assured that there's dedicated money that's going to be there. We've got an independent claims process now. Mr. Feinberg running the claims process in order to get this money out as quickly as possible.
Right. Well, Congressman, I mean, you know, but you raise a good point, too, that about Joe Barton in particular. He's not sorry. I don't know if you saw the latest that he tweeted, you know, this article, Why Joe Barton is Right. So he basically has sort of unapologized for his apology, unapologizing at this point. I mean, he's not sorry. He's sorry about the reaction to it, correct?
Well, if there was ever an instance of a less of a heartfelt apology in recent memory, that was it. I mean, you could tell he was gritting his teeth, biting his tongue when he was forced by some members of his own party to issue the apology, because he didn't believe in the apology. He believed in his original statement. Apologizing for the so-called shakedown, even though the company executive sitting right in front of him pushed back and said they don't view this as a shakedown, but the right thing to do under the circumstances.
And Representative Kind, it is, I think Rahm Emanuel made the good point that this is not a one-off. This is a theme. This is a policy on their side. I mean, I don't know if you heard the latest one. The Republican State Senator Randy Brogdon in Oklahoma, he's the Tea Party favorite in the race for governor there. For the Republican nomination. So it's this anti-government thing, Congressman. He said, you know, instead of placing blame on BP, he claimed that government's the problem, and the spill is a perfect example of why government should never be involved in the private sector. He said government's not the solution, it's the problem. The more government tries to get in and regulate the free market, the worse things become. Am I missing something here?
No, you're exactly. I mean, it's this laissez-faire free market. The private sector knows best. It doesn't need adult supervision philosophy that got us into so many messes in this country right now. Where did it begin? You know, I'm a kid who grew up in western Wisconsin and loved to play sports. But I also knew referees are an important part of the game. You may not agree with every call they make, but they enforce the rules. And the Republican Party believes in taking the referees off the field. And when you do that, what you get is a big oil gusher in the Gulf.
Right.
You get runaway banks on Wall Street acting like casinos rather than banks trying to grow our economy. You've got health insurance companies running roughshod over average Americans, figuring out ways to deny claims to them. This is what you get when you take the referees off the field, and that's what the Republicans believe in. And I think that is more than anything is what is irritating people around the country, are these larger institutional players that aren't playing by the rules. And we need someone there to offer some adult supervision again.
Yep, absolutely. Congressman, let me get your take on the McChrystal resignation before you go, General Petraeus, obviously, being the new commander. What's your take?
Well, first of all, it's only a call that the commander-in-chief can make. He's got to work with his field command daily in that and feel comfortable with it. But we do need a unified chain of command, people working off the same page. What the president needs and what the civilian leadership of this country needs more than ever is honest, candid, the unvarnished truth from our field commanders. But it needs to be done in private, not in the pages of Rolling Stone magazine. And that's where I think General McChrystal made a huge mistake. And the replacement, General Petraeus, is he's the one who wrote the manual on counterinsurgency, and he's got a lot of respect here on Capitol Hill. We hope to expedite his confirmation process right now, so there couldn't be a better one to take over the operation where it is. But these next 6 to 8 to 10 months are the crucial time period in Afghanistan, so you never want to see a shakeup at the top, but if ever there was one that was warranted, because it was clear that General McChrystal and his advising team weren't on the same page with so many of the other key leaders in the field, that a change had to be made.
Well, how do you address, though, Representative, that I think, you know, in many ways, too, it's seen as sort of doubling down on the Afghanistan strategy with the selection of Petraeus, and clearly some on the left are not going to be happy with that.
Well, the president's been clear, though, that he's adhering to the timeline. We're going to start seeing significant force withdrawal by next summer, and that's what the president wanted before he made the commitment with the plan that's being implemented right now. He was asking for exit ramps. What's the exit strategy in Afghanistan? That's the right question to be asking, because, you know, Afghanistan is a huge monumental challenge, and at some point, we've got to turn over responsibility in the future of the country to the Afghan people themselves and with the support of the international community. We can't be doing this on our own. And the president is still adhering to that timeline and keeping pressure on that plan to accomplish that goal. And General Petraeus is one that also helped on that plan. So I don't think we're going to see much of a gap as far as moving forward with General Petraeus there. He was heavily involved. But, again, he's the one who did write the manual on counterinsurgency, and the goal is to start reducing our presence in that region by next summer.
Yep. Congressman Kind, always so great to talk to you, and we will talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks. Good luck with the move.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I could use some of that just now.
What went wrong now?
Well, Calamity Steph has some new stories.
Oh, no.
I'll deal with now that General McChrystal has dealt with the president has dealt with General McChrystal's insubordination.
Yes.
Someone said, is it time for me to deal with yours and Rebecca's?
What?
To which I'm sure you're going to say, screw you.
Yeah, F off.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. 18 minutes after the... There you go. It's all going according to plan. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's your information slut. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour, a rollicking edition, Face the Grayson, coming up in just a few minutes. Julie in Seattle writes, yikes, I missed this one. Yikes, Mama, the very bowels of Earth itself shuddered last night. There was an earthquake, apparently.
Yes, in Canada.
Rattling buildings throughout New York State and delivering a creepy Pat Robertson-type message intended for Stephanie Miller. For the love of all that's holy, get your calamity magnet ass out of Calcutta before it starts raining frogs. I think
it was centered around Ottawa, and it could be felt in western New York. But
all right,
yeah.
Well, that's Mama's hometown.
Well, yeah.
Blackport, New York, of the transit from Buffalo.
They're not used to that sort of thing there. We are, you know, we're used to it here in Los Angeles, but I'm sure
it's me. I am a disaster magnet. Could I have some wacky comedy music for Calamity Steph, my new sitcom? Do you think I could pitch that when I get back to L.A.?
Sure. Someone will buy it.
So I left Rebecca. Was it a long message this morning?
Actually, she came in and confessed that she hasn't listened to it yet.
I asked if she could rent me a car because here's the thing.
No.
Well, just reserve one for me because I'm...
You can't reserve...
Listen...
She doesn't have a credit card to do that.
Well, use the guy that owns the show with trying to kill me for the life insurance money.
Is it... Okay.
It's fine. And I need a rent boy, too. Go ahead while you're using the card. I need a rent boy to carry my luggage. I just realized... Okay, so I get into L.A. like midnight with all of my bags and my broken fifth metatarsal with my boot on. How the hell am I? Okay.
Oh, Stephanie, they're going to need that actual credit card to run when you get to the counter. So I don't know that that's going to work.
I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to be a biatch on wheels tomorrow morning in Los Angeles on 1 hour of sleep with my broken metatarsal. because you might be asking, Chris, why, Mama, where is your car? It's on its way. Well, the truck that was carrying Mama's car is in Fuego currently.
It exploded.
Stephanie, we had a problem. The truck lit on fire. And so my car will be there, you know, with all my stuff by, you know,
whatever,
Christmas or something.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Have you ever, Chris, when you're moving to, I'm down to, like, seeds and stems in my refrigerator?
Yes.
And I had actually an old friend of mine who happens to be a very big radio bigwig.
Oh.
Very influential in my career. She's just an old friend, but I haven't seen her in years. And so I had, you know what I had? I served is a hunk of cheese. And yesterday I was on the phone and Max grabbed the cheese. He had the whole thing in his mouth and I just took it out because I, you know. Have you ever done that where I'm like, oh, it's fine.
And you served
it? He only got
it?
That part of it. Mm-hmm. That's what I served the big radio executive.
Did she know this?
No, she doesn't know.
Oh. She does now.
That's all I had, like just a few stale crackers and then this cheese. That, you know, because you kind of like, oh, he only got his on that part of the cheese. And so I took that. And I'm like, the rest of it's fine. I'm not going to grocery shopping now. I'm moving today.
Moving is hard. I am feeling your pain. I really am.
Thank you. All right. And I told you, they can't fit both dogs on Pet Airways today. We'll talk to the founder of Pet Airways later. So only Fred can go today. So Max has to stay here for a week with the dog walker. And so I'm having mother's guilt and stress about that.
Are you paying an extra week of rent in your New York apartment?
Well, it's already rented through, you know, June.
Okay, I was just wondering if you paid extra to house Max in your apartment for a week.
Had to get him his own apartment for a week. And put him up at the Plaza.
Yeah. You would, though. That's the thing.
I would. For my dogs, I would.
Yes.
All right. So let's just, pray that there's no other disasters.
Oh.
Unless you're the guy that owns the show and is trying to kill me for the life insurance money, in which case, you know, then you're... All right. Oh, you know what? You were nice enough, Chris, to send me some stories of people that may have had a worse week than me.
I try to do that just to
Thank
cheer you up.
And also, it gives me an opportunity to say, now, a story about a bear. Man hit by lightning, then mauled by bear.
That's
come on.
A bad day.
That guy had a worse day. He was mauled by a bear in his front yard a few weeks ago. Ever since he was struck by lightning in 2006, he says he's had trouble sleeping on restless nights. He putters around his farm. Recently at 2 a.m., he was heard a rustling, which is never good news, I find.
No.
Rustling's never good. As he turned to investigate, he was dealt a heavy blow. I heard this strange huffing. The next thing I knew, I had been run over and stepped on by a bear. A statistician said the chances of being struck by lightning are also extremely narrow. You have a greater chance of getting struck by lightning than getting killed by a bear. The likelihood of both happening to the same person, he said, the statistician, the probability is infinitesimal. The closest approximation is certainly zero. There would be zero chance, and yet this guy.
Mm-hmm. Poor fella.
And this one, when we get back, this guy is, this is going to be me, a man run over by truck after dog puts it in gear. I think my dogs are going to try to kill me once they're both back, and they're going to be like, you may just move to New York.
In the winter.
No.
It couldn't even bend during a nice time of year.
Yeah, they're going to try to run me over in my car, I'm pretty sure. This is only going to continue when I get home. We will tell you the man run over by a truck after a dog puts it in gear story. When we continue, 29 minutes after the hour, hop on those phones. Congressman Alan Grayson is ready for another edition of Face the Grayson as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I have some news that is doubly sad. First off, I am leaving town forever. And my going away present?
Stephanie Miller
is running off with me.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Oh, now here's the story of the man run over by a truck after his dog put it in gear.
Oh, boy.
That's going to be my next calamity, I can tell. In Florida, a man was reportedly run over by his own truck after his dog put it in gear. He was checking under the hood for under the car for oil leaks. You know
yes,
how you do that.
Sure.
He had put the running truck into neutral and left the driver's door open, his driver's side door open. When he was under the truck, his bulldog, Tassie, jumped into the truck and knocked the vehicle into gear. The truck rolled over the left side of Bishop's body.
No, Tassie, no.
Bad dog. He managed to get up, stop the vehicle, and get into his house. After several hours, this is a man thing, after several hours of pain, he finally called for help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he thought he could run that off. He's, no. He didn't want Tassie to think he was weak. All right, and this is going to be me after I snap, Chris. This will be me after the whole stress of this week. West Valley City, Utah. Police say a woman is undergoing a mental evaluation after leading officers on a bizarre chase while she wasn't wearing any clothes. Officers say she stole two cars, including a police cruiser, and crashed both before she was subdued with a stun gun.
Mm.
And no drugs or alcohol involved. So that's
really,
really sober. Sober she did that. All right. We are trying to locate Ellen Grayson.
Yes,
where
we
in
are.
The world is Ellen Grayson?
I don't know.
We're text and email buddies, you know. When I was in D.C. a couple days ago, Christopher,
He wanted to see you.
I did. We know we just keep missing each other, but I taped a thing for him. They're sending out a video thing, something. I don't.
Whatever.
He's calling in momentarily.
I will explain what it was when I get on the phone. But anyway, I taped a little video, a testimonial. As a huge fan of Ellen Grayson's, as I am.
He needs a testimonial?
It's not. If you're a fan of peace and Ellen Grayson, then who isn't, for God's sakes?
Okay. I'm a fan of both.
All right. Julie writes, good Jesus, Mama. I'm thankful I don't work for a living. 1 week in your job, and I'd be the subject of an episode of Snapped, that show about women who lose it and beat their coworkers into the next world with common household objects.
Yeah, that's on MSNBC right around the prison documentaries. I've seen that.
Wait till tomorrow when Mom's back in the studio in L.A. on an hour of sleep with a broken foot. How's about some good news for America? Bad news for right-wing world. Polls show a Republican rank and file are coming over to support of healthcare reform approval at his overall highest level yet. How's about that? A new Associated Press poll finds support for President Obama's new healthcare law has risen to its highest point. The nation remains divided. Still, the shift in public sentiment was significant. So there. All right. It is. Oh, we found him.
Yes.
Yay. It's that time of week, you know.
And now it's time for Congressman Ellen Grayson and your chance to face the Grayson.
Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning. I heard about that poll result. The nation remains divided between people who want health care and people who don't want other people to have health care.
That's right.
Exactly. They want theirs, but they don't want you to have yours. Congressman, I taped a little video thing for you the other day because you're doing something very important, and obviously in the context of the whole McChrystal thing, we have to talk about it. Would you like to start?
We're doing a peace party at our website, congressmanwithguts.com, and we're trying to raise consciousness and raise funds for the reelection campaign. We've had a number of people who represent the actual, I don't know, finest members of the human race. How else can I put this? Participate in the event, one of whom is you.
So you were pleased, obviously, with President Obama's decision to replace McChrystal, right?
I asked for it. I always love it when people do exactly what I say.
Well, and listen, we would all be better off if more people would do that, in my opinion.
Yes, that's true.
So you said the ultimate issue, not McChrystal's job, it's McChrystal's strategy. We need peace, not an endless war. I mean, you point out that, you know, I don't know if that's lost on people. This is already the longest war in American history.
Well, as that noted Democratic leader Dwight D. Eisenhower said, that's not right. As Republican President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, a former general, every missile we built is something stolen from the mouths of hungry children. We have to make our choices in life. We don't have the infinite ability to make both guns and butter. We have to decide. And I vote in favor of health care. I vote in favor of education. I vote in favor of roads. I vote in favor of the things that we need to do to meet our own human needs. And I vote in favor of jobs. You know, all this money that's going into the hands of the Pashtuns and the Tajiks and the Hazara over in Afghanistan, that's not helping us at all.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take care of ourselves first.
Well, and you said, you know, something else important. You said we have to make our decisions on war and peace based on what's right for America, not what's right for the generals or Halliburton or Blackwater. That's what's right for the military-industrial complex, but rather what's right for us.
I think I warned us about this when I was 2 years old. Everything that he said has come true. Our foreign policy is determined by the military-industrial complex. Our economic policy is determined by Wall Street. And the question is, how much longer are we going to let this go on? Should our energy policy be determined by BP?
Well, no, exactly. But, you know, I have to get your take on the fact that some people feel that the choice of Petraeus is sort of doubling down on the Afghanistan strategy. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, it is. Petraeus, like McChrystal, seems to be in favor of endless war, endless, pointless war. And as I said, we do need to think not only in terms of what McChrystal's job, but in terms of McChrystal's strategy. McChrystal wanted us to be embroiled deeper in war. The way to get out of Afghanistan is not to get deeper in. And that's
right.
What the strategy that we've been pursuing for the past year.
But, I mean, the president has obviously said the strategy is to get out of Afghanistan. Do you not buy that, or do you think, I mean, would you prefer it just be faster, or what's, I mean, in terms of, I mean, because this is what he ran on, right? I mean, he said, I'm going to finish the job in Afghanistan. We got distracted by the wrong war. I mean, what would you do if you were president?
The Al-Qaeda is not in Afghanistan. In fact, you don't have to take my word for it. General Petraeus said that last year. He said they're not in Afghanistan. If we wanted to fight terrorists in Mexico, would we occupy Arkansas?
Yeah. No, I mean, you raise a good point. So, I mean, because I think someone said that yesterday when, you know, I think the president, how did he say it? He said, this is a change in personnel, not a change in strategy. And then it is a moment to pause, isn't it, Congressman, and go, what is the strategy exactly? You're like, what is winning? How do we define, how do you think we're defining winning right now?
And no matter how they try to rationalize it, it comes down to the same thing. It's endless war for the sake of the military-industrial complex. They can paint it green, blue, purple, whatever color they want, but it always comes out to be exactly that and nothing else. And we need peace. We need peace to heal our economy. One of the fundamental underlying reasons why this country was taken to the brink of national bankruptcy by George W. Bush is because of these endless wars. It destroyed the Soviet Union. It's in the process of destroying us.
What do you make of this latest? It's almost like you just want to like a horror film. You want to put your hand over your eyes when you're watching this oil spill situation on TV. They obviously had yet another, I don't know what we'd call it, a mishap yesterday. What is the end game here?
I know the solution. The end game is very simple. We need to plug the hole with Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. All right.
It's like every time they try to make a case that, you know, drilling is safe and, oh, we wouldn't stop flying if we had one plane crashed and blah, 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 you know, and yet everything that happens keeps proving that they seem not to have any sort of expertise in how to stop this.
Well, it's our Chernobyl. In the same way that Chernobyl destroyed the entire countryside for hundreds of miles around and made it virtually uninhabitable, we've done the same thing with our Gulf. And for much the same reason. I mean, the Soviets had a system that was utterly dysfunctional, gave no concern to safety or the environment, and they ended up with Chernobyl. We have relegated those responsibilities to greedy oil companies, and we've ended up with a disaster in the Gulf.
I think it's this, you know, the moratorium, it just seems like such a no-brainer, and yet we have clearly our friends on the right saying, no, the real tragedy is stopping drilling even for a moment. You know, and we have a court case. We have a Republican trying to do legislatively overturn this moratorium. What's your take on that?
Even the no-brainers are hard for people with no brains.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of which, you know, you're obviously facing an election. You know, the media storyline, of course, is Democrats are going to take a beating, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I read a headline today that I thought was interesting. Establishment Republican PACs spend at least $2 million fighting Tea Party candidates in primaries, fighting off, in their own primaries, fighting off these crazy teabag candidates. So, I mean, I think that, and look at some of the candidates that they've already nominated that I think, frankly, are like lunatic fringe.
Well, the de facto litmus test to be nominated in a contested Republican primary is that you have to be crazy.
Yes.
That's the only way you're going to get passed.
Well, good. Let them spend all their money fighting each other, you know, fighting off these lunatic right fringe candidates, I think.
Well, the problem, it goes deeper than that, I think, in one respect. I mean, look at my district. I'm the first Democrat to represent my district in 34 years. It was literally designed for Republicans.
Yep.
So my district is going to be tough no matter what happens because of that was the Republicans' intention. The Republican
not for people that want a congressman. Not for people that want a congressman with guts.com.
Well, with your help, Stephanie, anything is possible.
That's right. Sanchez in Montebello, time to face the Grayson. Hi, Sanchez.
Good morning, everybody. I have a question, Congressperson. By the way, you definitely rock, so you have my support, even though I'm not in your state here. But there's a House Appropriations Committee Chair, David Obey, told the White House a few days ago that he was going to sit on the Obama administration's request for that $33 billion more for the Afghanistan war until the White House acted on House Democratic demands to unlock federal money to aid the states in averting a wave of layoffs of teachers and other public employees. Now, apparently, David Obey is standing alone on this. So I just would like to find out your gut feelings about this. Is this plan going to work, or are we going to throw another $33 billion down the hole for Afghanistan? What do you think, sir?
Well, David isn't standing alone, and in fact, David is the chairman of the Appropriations
right.
Committee in the House. So if he were standing alone, he'd still be pretty formidable. I think it's a sign that people are fed up with the war, that we understand that this can't go on forever, that we are cheating our own children.
Correct.
In my district, only $200 million in new federal aid kept the schools open last year and this year. There was actually a hit list of schools they were going to close in my district, which they did not have to close simply because they got the additional federal aid. Now that federal aid runs out on September 30th. David Obey is paying attention. George Miller, the chairman of the Education and Labor Committee, is paying attention. The Democratic rank and file are paying attention, and the White House apparently is not. So, yes, we do need to make sure that we keep our children in school, and that's a little bit more important than making sure that we tend to the well-being of the Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds.
Karen in Los Angeles, you're on with Congressman Grayson. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Congressman Grayson. I'm a great fan of yours, but I do have to address something.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
You know,
Stephanie's hand is over the button, I'm telling you right now.
Everybody, you know, the big progressive thing is the military-industrial complex. And while I understand it, it is one of the last things we have not exported to third world countries as far as manufacturing. It is one of the backbones of California, you know, Lockheed, and, you know, all the big aerospace companies, Boeing, Lockheed, you know, all the big ones are still manufactured here, and including sub-tiers that make up a huge portion of manufacturing. So when we put them out of business, there goes monumental amounts of unemployment. What do we do then?
No, I fundamentally disagree with that. And I think your husband, being a skilled, intelligent person, will have no trouble finding a job in an area other than making
not really.
Aerospace weapons to kill people.
No, it's not just weapons to kill people. It's cargo planes. Aerospace is cargo planes. We sell to China. We sell to right now. We're working on the JSF to replace most of the planes we've been flying since Vietnam. You know,
we do not have to waste our money on the military in order to keep the economy going. That is a lie. When you spend $100 million, let me finish. When you spend $100 million building a bridge, when you're done, you have a bridge. When you spend $100 million and drop it into the sands of Mesopotamia, it's gone forever. You have defeated yourself because you got...
Karen, sorry, honey, we're out of time. Not giving you the bum rush, I swear, but we are out of time on this segment. Congressman, finish your thoughts. I'm sorry. I just didn't...
Okay. My thought is this. When we spend money on ourselves, the money is well spent. Spending money in the military is like digging enormous holes on the surface of the planet, dropping money in, and then hiring other people to fill up the holes. In the end, you've got nothing but filled holes. We are not safer because we have 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. We are not safer because we have 100,000 troops in Iraq. Those people would all be much safer if they were brought home, and we'd all be safer, too.
Yep, and that's why the war is making you poor.
That's right.
That's the name.
War is Making You Poor Act is all about. H.R. 5353.
There you go.
You can find out about that and all things Grayson at congressmanwithguts.com. I love you, Alan Grayson.
We'll see you next. Stephanie. I am so sad that you're moving 2,000 miles further away. I hope it's nothing I said or did.
No. We will catch up with each other one of these days, I'm sure. Thank you, Congressman. See you next week.
Okay, thanks.
All right. There he goes. Congressman Bye. Alan Grayson.
Actually, we're on vacation next week, so.
Oh, well, I lied to him again then.
You did, yeah.
50 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 55 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Oh, Hal Sparks will be calling in from the green room at The View.
Yes.
Which he is co-hosting this morning.
That's right. He's co-hosting with Joe Scarborough.
Oh, dear God.
I know, right?
It's a dude week on The View. Malcolm in Pittsburgh, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Malcolm.
Hey, Stephanie. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to refute that argument from Karen, the right-wing nutball.
Oh, I don't know that she was right-wing, but I think she, you know, I mean, the problem is, Malcolm, I think the economy is so bad, and particularly when it's something close to home, like that's her husband that works, I guess. Was it Boeing or...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people are just concerned, I think,
right,
about jobs. But, you know, but at the same time, Congressman Grayson is right. The war is making you poor. So.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. The war is making us poor. The only thing is that she was mentioning that we somehow manufacture all of our planes and our boats and our bombs and guns, everything here. When actually what we really do is what happened with the car companies. Most of the stuff is manufactured outside of the United States. Then it comes into the United States. It gets shipped here, and then they put it together like a jigsaw puzzle. That's not really keeping jobs here in America. That money doesn't stay here. It goes back out again.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I hear you. Jan in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jan.
Oh, hey, Stephanie. Hi. I love you, and I love your taste in men.
Thank you.
Congressman Grayson and Chris and Jim, and then you had John Fugelsang on the other
day. Oh, they're dreamboats, each and every one of them.
You got the best guys in the world.
And Fugelsang will be in tomorrow, too.
I know. Yes. I heard. Yeah. I listened. I'm going to be tuned in, guys.
Good.
Listen, I want to talk to you about Fred and Max's ancestors, okay?
Okay.
Okay. I'm an animal lover, and I just recently joined the NRDC, the Natural Resource Defense Council, mm-hmm. and they have a petition now, and they're fighting for the rights of wolves because the wolves have been removed from the endangered species list, and now they're being hunted down, you know, by Palin and some of her crew, I guess, you know, from planes and, you know, those kind of things. So now the wolves are going to be suffering slaughter again. And
then, oy vey.
So there is a petition. I don't have a computer, so I don't know how to look
it up. By the way, who calls shooting a wolf from a helicopter with a high-powered rifle hunting?
Yeah.
Where's
not a sport?
It's just slaughter of the innocent is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, honey. That's doesn't seem like that's much of a sporting chance there.
No.
Hello, right. I'm here.
Hi, Jim Ward. How are you?
Oh, just
the good
candy.
News is you'll be able to actually squeeze my ass tomorrow morning. The bad news is I'm going to be a giant biatch with an hour of sleep and a broken foot.
If you even arrive.
Yeah.
There is that.
Yes. John may have to take over.
I've already informed him that there's a 50-50 chance
yeah,
of that.
You're probably going to wake up at 11 o'clock and go, oh, what?
The way my week week is going. I'm like, oh, is it on at a different time here? I forgot. It's been a while. All right, 58 minutes after the hour. Oh, we have the actually the president of Pet Airways coming up and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, baby, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Hey, kids, I have Carbonite Online Backup. It's a must for my computer. Should be for yours, too. Carbonite automatically backs up the files on your Mac or PC, whenever you're connected to the Internet. Go to Carbonite.com. Enter Stephanie for my special 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription. Carbonite.com. Offer code Stephanie. Do it. Do it now. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Warder, me, Stephanie Miller. Hal Sparks is, he is in the green room at The View where it's Man Week.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
He's hosting the other men.
That's right.
Exactly. Let's go say hello. Good morning, Hal Sparks.
Hi. Yes, it's about time, don't you think, that the men took over The View? Because I don't think men have enough programming on television. I think, you know, it's about time that we really got to, you know, pee in the corners of The View.
Thank God the downtrodden plight of the white man in America is finally going to be addressed today.
It's getting so horrible that, you know, I was like, where do we have shows other than all the major networks?
So you're co-hosting with Joe Scarborough?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's myself and Joe and Sherry and Elizabeth. Should be an adventure.
Delightful. And what's the mood there now? Is there any pre-show squabbling going on?
No. It's, I would like to, introduce everybody to some sort of backdoor, input into The View where you find out that they're really just at each other's throats all the time. But quite frankly, like all these shows, it's just making the donuts, you know, that's all they do. They
it's a job.
And make the donuts. It's, you know what it reminds me of, especially, like, I've done, you know, Fox's Red Eye a couple of times, and for all the hate and vitriol that they spend, you know, they spill onto the airwaves, behind the scenes, it's a lot like the old Sheepdog and Wile E. Coyote in the old Warner Brothers cartoon, where they just check out.
They just clock in, yeah.
Yeah, they just try to kill each other the whole time, and then you go, see you tomorrow, Dave, you know.
So when you go to commercial break, then it's just, and scene. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know I'm probably not shocking any of your listeners that there's not a consistent thread of ethical standard that goes through. But I mean, this is The View. So, I mean, most of what we're going to be talking about is man sex. So.
Yes. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Now,
about how awful men are and why we sleep with women. And,
yes.
The women that sleep with us never come into play. Unless they're prettier than the perceived woman on the panel, in which case she's a hoe.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you will have to espouse your Hal Sparks philosophy that you have espoused on the Stephanie Miller Show that you have said before. How will you know when you found
if you found the one?
Try all of them?
Exactly.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I will make precisely that point today as we discuss National Enquirer's allegations that Al Gore tried to fondle a masseuse in a hotel here in New York City.
Yes, we were just about to get to that. Did you see this breaking news? Apparently asking for a happy ending or something, and I.
Yeah.
It sounds fishy, doesn't it, this story?
Yeah, it sounds absurd is what it sounds. Like, essentially, she says that she started doing his abdomen, he started moaning, and then he told her to go lower. When she wouldn't, he grabbed her hand and put it there, which sounds so Al Gore.
I just wanted her to speak with a lower voice.
Right.
I just said, lower your pitch. You're just a little too screechy.
You're right.
It was misinterpreted wildly.
Ruining my massage because you just sound so squealy, tinny is the word.
Well, I mean, interesting that in initial reports, it sounds like, you know, this was sort of reported and not even, you know, the police didn't even follow up because there seemed to be no evidence of any kind. A newspaper there, it was 2 years ago, I guess, declined to report it.
Yeah, it's goofy. It's one of those things that's just clearly, and they're floating it now because he's getting a divorce. So that's what pushed it to the surface. Maybe this was it. Maybe he divorced him because of this. Maybe it's because he gets massages all the time. What's the story?
They're trying to give him the John Edwards treatment.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's nothing there. Yeah. So it's just going to be this lame, you know, they're going to do a tennis serve with a badminton shuttlecock, and it's just going to go, dude, thud.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's one of those doesn't pass the smell test. You're like, John Edwards, you're like, I can see that. Al Gore, I'm like, I don't think so.
They're saying, in essence, look how lucky we are that the Supreme Court elected our president in 2000.
Oh, totally.
Yes, because Al Gore's a maniac. Yeah.
Seriously. Can you imagine him unleashed? He's like Clinton on steroids now.
I'm sorry you had to see me like this. Outraged.
Periscope up.
Hal Sparks, I have sorely missed your happy clappy liberalness on the show because
I know.
I've been dealing with the naysaying mooks now for.
I know. I've heard that nothing but sad reports from the from the Twitterverse about their panic attacks.
Oh come on! All we do is just clock in, fight, and then clock back out.
Right.
Again.
I know. That's what I mean. If it was based on principle, I kind of wouldn't mind. But clearly,
yay!
Okay, whose side is it today? You take that side, I'll take the other one. Okay, there we go. And scene.
That's what they do on Red Eye.
Right, totally. It's like
Morning, Sam.
Yeah, right. Except for the fact that their main producer he has to be suicidal, if not the most depressed person I've ever seen in my life. And so he's just dead inside. So I think that's where the overall tone comes from at Fox, is that there's like this veneer of guys. It's lovely being in New York, and as you knew while you were here, Steph, if you get over to the Fox studios especially, there's this veneer of dread that it's like a film between like the Roger Ailes zone of things and just above the anchor's heads, which is most stories as well. But they, you know, they just don't. It's just like, why bother? The end's coming anyways. Who cares? Like, it's amazing.
Well, let's get your take on the oil spill, because I know as a comic book aficionado, you're also shocked, like the right wing is, that the president is not Aquaman. And
Hasn't flown down.
Yes.
You know, I keep expecting him to scream no and then fly to the atmosphere and reverse the polarity of the Earth and fly back through time.
I did that already. I got that covered. I did.
Yeah. here's the thing. I mean, and Jim and I talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, but the relief well is the only real option. The change now that has to happen, and this will be in their new set of rules, is two relief wells. End of story. Any deep water drilling, any even like medium depth, anything that they don't have absolute 100% certainty, like the other 3,000 rigs that are out there. If they're going into any deep water, any kind of explorative, they're going to have two other relief wells pre-dug.
Right.
Period.
Yeah, that's what apparently Al Gore was looking for as well, was a relief well of some sort.
That's what I meant. She misinterpreted what I was saying. I was talking about oil exploration.
I was on my cell phone getting a rub down.
Good heavens.
I was talking to Hayward, and he was saying, they just need to get the remote to go lower. Just go lower.
Hal Sparks, the General McChrystal firing, your take on all that and Petraeus coming in.
Quite frankly, I was not a fan of his during the Pat Tillman thing.
Yeah.
So, good riddance to bad rubbish as far as I'm concerned. Bringing Petraeus in, I see what they're doing with it. It's a smart political move. I think ultimately the only thing that would make everybody generally happy is to find the one guy in the military who goes, okay, we're out tomorrow. But that's not going to happen. And with Petraeus, you at least can, Petraeus was on board. He created the counterinsurgency policy that McChrystal was implementing. He was the actual one of the authors of how they do it. So it's a good choice for how to, you know, to run it without the kind of bravado-y Rambo BS that McChrystal would do, which was, you know, I'm going to show up and go on point with these guys. Well, you don't do that when everything, when you run everything, you have to stay in the back and run everything. Don't, you, if you get your head shot off, we have to go through this all again. You, you know, there's a reason why, you know, generals stay in the back, and it's not all just ego and fear. So,
right.
You know, I think Petraeus, you know, what they'll try to do is kind of use, the surge in Iraq element of that to reinforce the surge in Afghanistan. They're not going to send any more troops or whatever, but they're going to tighten the timetable. And the reason he didn't do Petraeus in the first place was because the timetable was too loose, for Obama. You know, Petraeus was like, well, we could probably do this. And Obama was like, no, I get in, get out. And it was interesting that he went and spoke to Colin Powell about the McChrystal firing before he did it. And I think this has, if you look at what Obama's doing in a lot of ways, he's trying to do like a heightened, smarter, you know, tighter version of the Powell doctrine insofar as this, you know, and it's just, and everybody's fighting him on it the same way, quite frankly, that they fought Colin Powell under the Bush administration. You know, Powell was supposed to do what he was told and not, you know, and just say, toe the party line or whatever, even though he had, but you know, a better idea, and eventually that's what forced him out. Essentially,
yep. Hal Sparks, I am flying home to Los Angeles later with my broken fifth metatarsal, but I will be at your DVD release party for Charmageddon.
Yay!
Hal Sparks' fabulous new comedy special.
Yay! Yes.
And where you will rub my broken metatarsal and sand my corns.
No question. I will. Mm-hmm. I'll bring acupuncture needles. It'll be you stream your healing. It'll be a good time.
Yeah.
That's Hal Sparks' model. What's the point of doing it if it's not on Ustream?
Exactly. Like,
why even say it if it's not being broadcast somewhere?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I live my life in the wide open. That way, when I do stuff that's secret, it's really, really secret.
Exactly.
Instead of this moderate secrecy. Who needs that?
All right, honey bun. I'm gonna run. I will see you. I will see you back in L.A.
Absolutely. Yeah.
See you next.
And then I'm in for you all next week.
Oh, that's right. Hal Sparks filling us in for us all next week when we're on vacation. Enjoy, won't you? It's Mama's little gift to you.
Exactly. So it'll be the first time ever that I filled in for you and seen you at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't get the memo, by the way, of getting the sucky fill-in host so I look better. I get people that are better than me, so I am in danger of losing my job.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I love you.
I adore you. You're awesome. And I'll see you guys on Monday.
All right, honey. See you Monday.
Yay, bye.
There he goes. There he goes. Hal Sparks off to co-host The View on Man Week. I wonder if they're doing a cup check before they go on set.
Probably.
All right. 18 minutes after the hour, back with the president of Pet Airways, where my doggies are about to fly. They're passengers, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Also, Richard Engel reporting for us live from Afghanistan, coming up just in a few minutes on The Stephanie Miller Show.
You'll cheer, you'll cry, you might even get a cheap laugh or two.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Nasty dog.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. It's Doug Flying Day, 24 minutes after the hour, 1-800. All right. Alyssa Binder, my buddy, my pal, the president and founder of Pet Airways, joins us now. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. Chris, my producer, says you have a surprise for me. What's the surprise?
Yes, I do. I'm going to get to see you this evening.
You are?
I flew into New York, so I get to see you and Fred.
Oh, yay. Okay, fabulous. So Fred is flying on Pet Airways, where he will be a passenger. Get it, everybody? and then Max is going in a week. On July 1st. And I have to tell you, you are so good with me because I bet you deal with a lot of hysterical pet parents.
We're all crazy.
Yeah, but because I was freaking out, we couldn't get them on the same flight. But you guys really, you know, you really do put the pets first, and I appreciate that. You guys were so nice and, you know, accommodating. Because Max is actually bigger than the plane, I think, isn't he?
He's pretty large.
But anyway, I have to tell you, I really, really believe in your service. We were talking, you probably saw this horrible story a couple of weeks ago. John Travolta's dogs got killed at an airport.
Yeah.
Some, you know, airport employee was walking them, and they were run over by a service truck or something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's just one of the, that's the reason for you guys, right? I mean, it's one of the many, many horror stories, unfortunately, you hear about trying to fly pets, particularly commercially, right?
That's correct. That's correct. And it's really because we are pet lovers and we really care about their safety and loving them and making sure that they're safe. That's really, really the most important thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, and you can tell even when you take them, when I've taken, you know, they only flew here 7 months ago, but when I dealt with you guys before, you can tell that the people really, really love dogs that are taking care of them because everybody, you know, it's stressful. Traveling's stressful for everybody, right?
Oh, I did it last night, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm telling you, when I researched it, I thought, you don't even want to mention some of the stuff, but it's like, you know, they fly cargo, first of all, if they go commercial, and they can forget to pressurize properly, heat or air condition properly. It's dark in there. It's unbelievably loud. You know, dogs get traumatized, right, even if nothing physically happens to them, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. Just in fact that it's dark and loud. Imagine if you were in a can and it's dark and loud. Not to mention about, the pressure, the temperature, so on and so forth. And how about just sitting out on the tarmac waiting? I mean, when you're sitting in a plane and it's warm, imagine what it's like out on the tarmac when they're being loaded.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I have to tell you, the last time I moved back from New York to L.A., I actually rented a giant RV and hired a friend's brother to drive me and my three giant dogs across the country. And let me just say, that was a nightmare. It was like being in a giant inside a giant vibrator for 5 days. I had a headache. My dogs lost seriously like 10 pounds apiece. They had thyroid, issues from stress. I mean, because it's a long way, a lot of these trips. That's also stressful for dogs, right?
Absolutely. You know, car sickness and so on. But, I mean, we'd rather see them in a car than in being put in cargo holds. So that's why we have Pet Airways where they can fly in the main cabin where it's, well lit, climate controlled, and there's a pet attendant taking care of them at all times.
And do they get drinks and snacks? What does the and the pet attendant is a human? I take it not.
It is a human, generally most of them are vet technicians. If not, they're all pet professionals, so they can administer medication if necessary. Give them water. We really do not feed any of the pets on the plane because we don't want them to get sick. So again, it's all about their safety, care, and comfort. And those are our three main points, and we stick to it. So number one is safety.
Listen, everybody in the off-leash area of Central Park knows about Pet Airways. Let me just tell
you. Bless you.
I proselytize for Pet Airways everywhere I go. That's the great thing is that they fly in the main cabin. You don't fly with them. People fly separately. But, you guys, like, stop overnight. You feed them. You walk them. It's so much. It's already so stressful moving for people. So, I mean, it's such a relief, I know, for pet parents to not have to stress about their pets' travel.
Which is, it's really nice. I mean, you're a pet parent. You've already experienced our service and me being a crazy pet parent. But when you love your animals as much as we all do, we want to take care of them and make sure that they're happy and that they're safe. And when we're, especially relocating, we're calmer and we want to make this as stress-free as possible. So.
I don't know if I told you, I broke my foot a couple of days ago. So you what, I'm like up to here with stress. So thank God Max and Fred are going to be well taken care of. I will see you. It's petairways.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Check it out. Doing the Lord's work. I will see you at the airport here in New York later.
I
with
look
Fred.
Forward to it. Great.
All right. Thank you, Alyssa. Alyssa Binder, CEO.
Thank you.
Pet Airways, 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
California, here I come. Right back where I started from.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour, the president yesterday on General McChrystal.
The conduct represented in the recently published article does not
meet the standard that should be set by a commanding general.
Wow. Check me out. Aren't I fancy? I am going live now to Richard Engel, a reporter extraordinaire from MSNBC who is in Kabul, Afghanistan. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks so much for coming on. I really, really enjoy your work.
I appreciate that. It's a pleasure.
Well, Richard, obviously, you know, big news over there and here with this whole General McChrystal situation and the Petraeus being the replacement. What is the feeling over there? I know yesterday Karzai had said that he was a McChrystal supporter, correct?
Karzai is a McChrystal supporter, and Karzai's spokesman is now making the media rounds, actually right as we speak, and he is telling people, we will accept whoever the U.S. Decides to send over here, we will support the process, we appreciate President Obama's decision, so Karzai is getting on board, but he certainly was a McChrystal fan. He liked McChrystal because McChrystal empowered him. McChrystal wanted Karzai to take a more senior position, to assume leadership, and Karzai felt some of the previous commanders here were taking a more authoritarian approach and bullying him, and that wasn't McChrystal's style.
How do you feel Karzai is going to be able to work with Petraeus?
It'll be fine. He knows Petraeus. He knows Petraeus is a serious, serious player, that he has direct access to President Obama, that he has very significant relationships across the region. Karzai will take him seriously.
Richard, as a reporter who obviously covers Afghanistan, what was your take on this whole, on the whole McChrystal situation, and did the president make the right decision, in your opinion?
Obviously people are sad when you see someone's career destroyed so quickly because of a bad article and a lapse in judgment on his behalf. And this was a bad article about him, and there was clearly a lapse of judgment that took place in allowing himself to make these kind of comments, especially in front of the presence of a reporter who is, you know, very obviously there with a tape recorder in hand making notebooks. So from everyone that I've spoken to, including individuals here on the ground, they think he had compromised his position so much and had to go. And, it's unfortunate when you see someone who's worked so hard had to go, but the feeling among a lot of people who know him was that it was time. It was time for him to go.
Richard, as a reporter that covers war, I mean, I do have to ask, what was he thinking? I mean, I was reading reports, I don't know if you saw those, that there was even more said that was off the record, that was even worse than that.
I think it was a lapse of judgment. The way the reporter was with him, it was in a very comfortable environment. They were in Paris, which is the opening scene of that article. McChrystal and his team were letting off steam. It was his anniversary. They were at a bar, and then there was just a very comfortable environment, and I guess he forgot that the reporter was there or felt overly comfortable with him and made a mistake.
I didn't know the bar thing. That's one of the rules here on the Stephanie Miller Show. Nothing ever good ever comes from drinking games with brown liquor.
Yes, if you bring, you know, if you're a commanding general, you don't bring necessarily a reporter who you don't know. This is the first time you're meeting him, who you know is writing a profile for Rolling Stone magazine, out drinking with you at a bar.
Yeah, that would seem to be rule A. Richard, so a lot of people, you know, I mean, the headline I'm reading this morning is Obama doubles down on war strategy. Is that the way you feel like people are seeing the selection of General Petraeus?
Certainly. There is no question about continuity. There is no question about a change in policy. This is General Petraeus's policy, and he's bringing the top man that he can find to do the job. So he's definitely doubling down. There is no one that I can think of more senior, more qualified, more serious that he could appoint to this job. So
finishing
pulling the last rabbit out of his hat.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and certainly this is what he ran on, is finishing the job in Afghanistan, you know, having said that we got distracted by the wrong war in Iraq. But, you know, obviously, as you know, many on the left, Richard, really are at the point where they're going, what is the strategy in Afghanistan? And al-Qaeda isn't there anymore, largely, are they? I mean, what do you make of what the strategy
is,
and are we going to get out when we say we are?
Yeah, there. Well, we haven't said when we're getting out. Everyone focuses on this deadline in about a year from now, when the troop surge starts to end. But no one has ever said when we're getting out, and that is a great concern. What is the strategy? How is it working? And how long is it going to take? And I think those are still, well, the strategy, everyone knows what the strategy is right now. And I actually think President Obama enunciated it very well yesterday. He said they're going to, and it was one of the most clear explanations of what the goals are in Afghanistan, and I think he did it very well. He said that the goal is to stop the Taliban's momentum, to fight al-Qaeda, support the government, and help Pakistan and the government of Afghanistan fight local extremists the best they can. So four main objectives. If they're possible, each one is possible. They might not have enough time in the amount of time that the people in the United States are willing to give this conflict anymore. It's been 9 years already.
Richard, what, I mean, I know this is sort of an open-ended question, but I mean, what is your sense being there, how things are going? I mean, I know the U.S. is gearing up for a big offensive in Kandahar, correct?
Correct and not correct. There is not going to be a military push on Kandahar. Some people have said they're going to attack the city. There will be no attack on Kandahar. What they're trying to do is a cleanup operation to improve the policing of the city, improve the local government. So it's more of a focus on Kandahar than it is a Fallujah-style offensive like we saw in Iraq. This Kandahar is very important. It is the birthplace of the Taliban. It is the center of gravity of the Taliban. So that's one thing. In general, no, I think it's the strategy is not going so well right now. This is the deadliest month ever in the war. There is frustration among many of the soldiers that the rules of engagement, the rules that they have to use that dictate when they're allowed to use force are too tight, that Afghans aren't taking well to this hearts and minds campaign, that American troops are out there trying to engage with Afghans and win them over and convince them that they should reject the Taliban and embrace the American plan. And Afghans, by and large, aren't doing that. So there is a frustration. Now, the American commanders will say it's still too early. It might take a year to know if the counterinsurgency strategy is working. And you tell me, you interact with the public and have a domestic show. Do the American people have a year's more patience to know even if this strategy is working?
Yeah, it's a tough question, Richard. You have a special coming up on Sunday on Dateline on Afghanistan, correct, on NBC?
That is correct, on Dateline this Sunday, and it is about one particular battle in Afghanistan that was very significant, and a lot of soldiers were killed and injured in this battle at a remote outpost just about 2 years ago. And what's so important about it is it became a very underreported turning point in this war. The American soldiers were pushed out onto this little outpost, surrounded by mountains, and they had to build their own defenses, and they were attacked by several hundred Taliban fighters. And after this, the U.S. left the outpost and started changing policy, deciding not to keep American troops in such far-flung, remote places that are hard to resupply. But after this battle, so that's one story, is the battle, which is quite a harrowing account. Then you have the second story, which is the parents of the soldiers who were killed there decide to launch their own investigation, figuring out, well, how could this be? How were our sons left in this indefensible situation? And they uncovered many, many mistakes, and they led to a series of investigations that have been ongoing into this incident. And there have been recent developments in the story even this week. So it has been a constant fight for this family to try and get answers.
Well, speaking of which, boy, certainly among other people, the Tillman family, I believe, welcomed this decision on General McChrystal, because a lot of people thought, you know, that was one strike already too many before even, you know, he's had a couple other walking off the reservations even after that, correct?
Well, Well, the Tillman situation was the first time he really entered into the public scrutiny, because before he had this job, General McChrystal was in charge of Black Ops, a command called JSOC, which is the most secretive special operations force in the world, in the United States. They do all of the high-value target assassinations, the snatch and grabs. They're the most, you know, dangerous individuals that the U.S. military has. He ran this command, and he was very good at it. Now, while he was also in this command, he was in charge of the Ranger Regiment, which Pat Tillman was part of, and he's been accused of, when Tillman was killed by friendly fire, of not adequately or quickly releasing that information and effectively being involved in a hush-up campaign. Those are the accusations. Anyway, he has apologized for that.
Right. Richard, I have to ask you before you go, would you believe my brother-in-law is in Afghanistan? He's on a government contract. He's a lawyer, you know, involved in the privatizing the oil and gas industry, etc. And his life sounds like a living hell. What is your life like living in these foreign war zones?
Well, we live, I must admit, we live better than most of the contractors that are here, because the contractors tend to live on American military bases. They get contracts to work with the Afghan government or Iraqi government or to work with the Department of Defense, and they live on these paces that it sometimes feels like a prison life.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You have to walk around with a flak jacket, you eat food off a tray, and you could be there for 4 years, and you get paid a little bit more than you would in the States, but, you know, you live in a trailer and you are eating food off a tray.
Nice.
Here, you know, journalists live differently. I'm in a house right now in the middle of Kabul. It's in a fairly nice area. We have a barbecue outside.
Oh, wow.
We cook for ourselves. We have our own transport, our own vehicles. We don't live on military bases, so we move around as we wish. And the same thing was true in Baghdad. You know, we lived in a hotel for a long time. So while you were at a contractor, you live on this confined living. No, our hotel wasn't great. It was attacked several times, and it was blown up. But when it wasn't being blown up, it was a, you know, decent lifestyle.
Well, that's I don't know. I guess that's a low bar, but we appreciate your fight.
The bar is low. Well,
it didn't blow up, so it was a good day. Yeah. Yeah. Richard Engel.
It was better than living in a prison compound. I couldn't take that.
That's true.
That's for sure. MSNBC's chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, we so appreciate your time and the dangerous work that you do to do such great reporting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for helping me promote the Dateline special. I hope people watch.
This Sunday on NBC. Thanks so much, Richard. There he goes. He's on probably one of those big sat war phones things. All right. 40,
wow.
You know, your G.I. Joe had. All right.
Yeah.
46 minutes after
Afghanistan
the hour.
Was like camping, except for all the blowing up of stuff.
Exactly. 47 minutes. He had me until the blowing up of things. 47 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
You people make me sick.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Barry in New York. Hi, Barry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hamid Karzai is a McChrystal supporter. Really? Did Obama need any other reason to dump him? Oh, yeah, Pat Tillman spotted up in England, all that stuff. And really, you really leave in New York? I thought you were tougher than that.
No.
No, as it turns out, I'm a big meow.
It's okay. We'll love you anyway.
Thank you, baby.
To see you well coast to coast.
All right, honey. Thank you. Let's go to Chad in Idaho. Hello, Chad.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I've called the RNC and I've called some Republican senators, and they have no intention of working with Obama on this jobs bill, and I hope he realizes that.
No.
I mean, they're just horrible. They talk, they don't want to spend. I mean, a little less Arsenio and a little more Shaft. Can he please get mad a little bit? I mean, seriously.
Thank you. All right.
I think that was a little
He's
bit
too
racist.
Arsenio. Yeah. I haven't heard that one yet. Kevin in Washington, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Kev.
Good morning, lovely Stephanie.
Good morning, baby.
I was very sorry to be informed about your foot.
Yes.
I'm truly distressed. I mean, I guess no secret.
You know, as someone that's actually carried me at an event before, I should hire you to come to L.A. and carry me everywhere.
I got to tell you about that. You have to beat down that redhead that's, like, totally taking your career. She's so copying you, including having a black gentleman that's really into you picking her up.
Who are we talking about?
Oh God, she was just on Joy Behar's show. The one that's on the D-list. What's her name?
Oh, Kathy Griffin.
Yeah,
oh,
Kathy Griffin. Republican mother. She talks about box wine, and then the other day she talked about this black guy that's really into it. That and with a picture of her picking her up. And I'm like,
well, how dare she that?
Absolutely, but I'll get on that another day. But I
yes.
For now, I wanted to talk about the oil spill. You know, Superman is one of my favorite superhero characters, but there was one thing that I always thought was fake. Not that, you know, no one can tell who he is with the glasses, but, you know, that no one believed when they said that his world would be destroyed, that no one at least looked into it. I said even human beings wouldn't be that stupid, much less an advanced race. Well, here we are with the oil spill, when you can visibly see every day how much damage it's causing, and there's still people talking about, well, we'll just keep drilling. You don't even have a six-month moratorium on it. I don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Don't believe your eyes. Don't believe what you're seeing on the TV.
Yeah, the TV lies.
All right. The president yesterday talking about Afghanistan.
Make no mistake, we have a clear goal. We are going to break the Taliban's momentum. We are going to build Afghan capacity. We are going to relentlessly apply pressure on Al-Qaeda and its leadership, strengthening the ability of both Afghanistan and Pakistan to do the same.
Yeah, well.
Yes, Jim?
Yes, who? Yes, Eeyore?
It's starting to sound a little like peace with honor. You know.
Well, obviously the main issue yesterday, the General McChrystal, so I guess our fantasy didn't happen. He didn't say, I quit. You can't quit. He did accept his resignation. Remember, we didn't know how that goes, whether he can go, no, you can't quit. But he did. He accepted his resignation, the president yesterday.
It undermines the civilian control of the military that is at the core of our democratic system. And it erodes the trust that's necessary for our team to work together to achieve our objectives in Afghanistan.
He said McChrystal's statements did not meet the standard that should be set by a commanding general. The president again.
I don't make this decision based on any difference in policy with General McChrystal, as we are in full agreement about our strategy.
So, McChrystal, we said this yesterday, apparently had acknowledged I've compromised the mission. I was told that he resigned even before the meeting. Did you hear that?
I had heard that, yes. But I think officially he gave the letter to Obama in that meeting, and the meeting was less than 15 minutes, from what I understand.
Yeah. Still to be a fly on the wall.
Not much to talk about once you turn in your letter of resignation.
Yeah, so much okay. Really to say. Just kind of awkward.
So how about that World Cup?
Don't go changing.
Landon Donovan, huh? That was cool.
Don't go changing.
Yeah, did you get your new iPhone yet? You know, that sort of thing.
Oh, everybody's talking. You got your iPhone yesterday, geek boy?
I got my iPhone in the mail yesterday. I love it. It's very crispy.
All right, the president yesterday.
It is my duty to ensure that no diversion complicates the vital mission that they are carrying out. That includes adherence to a strict code of conduct.
And then he talked about tolerating debate but not division.
I've just told my national security team that now is the time for all of us to come together. Doing so is not an option but an obligation. I welcome debate among my team, but I won't tolerate division.
Yeah, we'll see coming up in Right Wing World. I think Glenn Beck says he shouldn't have done it because otherwise he'll seem thin-skinned, Jen. He's too, yeah.
Yeah,
Glenn
Beck says
tetchy.
Glenn Beck says any other president would have done it except for Obama.
He's too tetchy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's too thin-skinned. He'll cry at the drop of a hat.
But says a guy that weeps every night on television.
Shut up.
President again.
Let me say to the American people, this is a change in personnel, but it is not a change in policy.
Well, that's a good or bad thing, depending on your feelings on all that.
The policy being, when do we get out? When we win. Right. And what does that mean exactly?
So the decision obviously widely supported on both sides of the aisle. John McCain yesterday.
There is a role for the military in our society, and that role is that you not only obey civilian leadership, but you respect civilian leadership, and if you don't, then you resign.
And his little sidekick, Lindsey Graham. His little wingman.
The President of the United States, our Commander-in-Chief, had no other choice in my view. I've been a military officer most of my adult life, and there's lines you can't cross. Those lines were crossed.
58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. Mama's last show from New York for right now.
How sad.
Thank you, everybody. Tell me to break a leg on my trip.
You see, because you already did.
Yeah.
I already did.
Don't break your other foot on the way down the stairs.
I seriously, Jim, I need a rent boy. I realize I'm coming with like several suitcases tonight and my broken foot, and I have to rent a car.
And you need a long stroke.
Pardon me?
Clear everything. Never mind.
I do need a long stroke. What are you doing later? All right. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Crystal Boyd. Voice deity, Jim Ward. Me, Stephanie Miller.
How was your going away party yesterday?
I'd like to show up for a massage tonight at my house, Jim.
Well, I might have to do what Al Gore was alleged to have done.
Oh, boy.
Can I just tell you of all the ridiculous details in this story?
I love the one. It says he fondled her buttocks and breasts and tongue kissed her and threw her down on the bed as she tried to thwart his advance. It sounds awful like the Tipper kiss and that the convention.
Yeah, Tipper's like, welcome to my world. Gore wrapped her in a quote unquote inescapable embrace. Inescapable, that's what you are.
My inescapable you.
And then she called him a fatty. She said she was intimidated by his physical size, calling him rotund.
Well, he is.
And described his violent temper. Oh, yeah, we've often seen that on display.
I'm sorry you had to see me like this. I'm just livid, as you can tell.
Okay, here's the weird part. Later, she said he tried to lure her into the bedroom to hear pop star Pink's Dear Mr. President on his iPod.
That's a bit clumsy.
I don't believe this whole story. This is why the police didn't pursue this, because there was no evidence of this. It was sort of reported and unreported back, whatever it was, right, 2 years ago?
Yeah. I love that she called him a crazed sex poodle.
Yes, that part is good. And then when he lured her, because who wouldn't rush into listen to someone's iPod with a Pink song? What? Then she said he suddenly flipped me on my back, threw his whole body face down over the top of me, pinning me down. She said she loudly protested, "Get off me, you big lummox!"
Lummox?
Lummox?
Nobody Nobody uses the word lummox anymore.
You're a heel, I tell you, a heel.
Get a load of these gams.
All right. You can email us all at thestephaniemiller.com like Jam and Jesse did. Who is the official walking billboard of the Stephanie Miller Show? Steph, greetings from your hometown, Buffalo. I bought a shirt and modified it just for you. The shirt has the words, "I've got a Steph infection" on the back. Isn't that delightful?
Oh, boy.
Your show logo on the front with the picture of you with the liberal and proud of it sign. Hope you like it. Your walking billboard. Oh, Jesse, that is some photographic evidence of Steph infection. That is
kind
so
of
nice.
Gross, actually. But...
Jim, I have a quote for you. Mm. Who said, the explanation for Obama's midterm polling slide is actually very simple. It was inevitable from the moment he was elected, and there was nothing he could have done to avoid it. Any president experiences a drop in his second year. The only question is of degree. In Obama's case, the drop was always going to be pronounced, given the enormous popularity he started out with and the gruesome economic conditions he walked into.
Richard Pryor.
No. A guy named Steve Kornacki, who I just put on my future husband list.
Hmm.
Okay. Oh, Julie sends an explanation for why all the bickering with the two of you mooks over the last couple of weeks. Male menopause is apparently rare, but not a myth.
I'm way too young to be going through menopause.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
See how cranky, see how sensitive and cranky and bloated you are?
Yeah, I'm so bloated.
All right. Here's some other, there's some breaking boner news.
Oh?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds painful.
That's exactly. It's about the John Boner. Dear Steph, OMFG, I am so pissed at the boner. This time, this tanning bed broiled giant orange rabbit republitard asshat bastard person has gone too far.
Oh.
Yesterday, he sent a bonergram to his constituents back home in Ohio, calling the Humane Society of America a radical organization with
what?
An extreme animal rights agenda.
Hell no, you can't!
That's what she says to Boner, exactly.
What a bastard.
He is a bastard person. Oh, here's a bad job. By the way, if you think you have a bad job or you don't have one in this particular economy,
yeah.
How would you like to be used as a decoy Jew by the Dutch police?
A what? I thought this was a Mel Gibson story.
This is worse than a number two Al-Qaeda job. This is Dutch police use decoy Jews by dressing law enforcers in Jewish religious dress in an effort to catch anti-Semitic attackers. Amsterdam police already disguise officers as decoy prostitutes, decoy gays, and decoy grannies in operations to deter street muggings and attacks on homosexuals in the city's red light district.
Wow.
I don't think I want to be a decoy
Jew?
Anything.
They have decoy dykes for Dutch boys to put their fingers in? What?
All right. Thank
it's
you.
It's a Dutch folktale.
Yeah.
What are, like, the top 10 crazy facts about Kim Jong-il that have just been released?
Oh, boy.
Or as Kim Jong-il would say, top 10.
Was it top 10?
Crazy facts.
Crazy fact about Kim Jong-il. Dear reader.
These are, by the way, a lot of these, the first five, I believe, are put out by the North Korean media.
And they're good.
So, yes, the state-run. The number 10 fact by the state-run media, he had a supernatural birth. At the moment of his birth, a bright star lit up the sky. The season spontaneously changed from winter to spring, and rainbows appeared.
Yes, and I was born in a log cabin, just like President Lincoln.
He probably wrote that James Taylor song about the winter and the spring and the summer and the fall as well.
In the spring, summer, fall, all you have to do is call, except the phone line, the crap in North Korea. Well, if you had an
number
iPhone.
Number nine, fact, in the North Korean media, he is a fashion trendsetter, apparently.
Yes.
His style?
Olive drab is the new breck.
doesn't he always wear that same pantsuit? How is that a...
Pretty much.
Okay,
he just needs a nice sweater vest.
Fact number eight, the world loves him. According to the state-run media, Kim Jong-il is the most prominent statesman in the present world, and people in countries the whole planet over celebrate his birthday with films and festivals.
Film festival. Yeah, film about my life, starring Lindsay Lohan.
I actually think Jim Ward could probably get paid some big coin to show up at a Kim Jong-il film festival.
I think you're right.
What's the one they had there in the mountain? It's a big one. With the rubber to read foot.
Sundance.
Sundance.
Number seven.
I think I'll tell them. That's how powerful I am.
Number seven. I think I'll mention this when I get my final Shake Shack burger today in New York. He invented the hamburger.
Oh.
According to the state.
I see.
Special sauce. Special order. Don't upset us.
Number six.
Have it my way. Eat the only way.
Number six, Kim Jong-il. In fact, he is the best natural golfer in history. It's been reported by the Pyongyang media that Kim Jong-il shot a 38 under par on a regulation 18-hole golf course, including five holes in one.
A 38 under par?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
That score is 25 shots better than the best round in history and is made even more amazing by the fact that it was his first time playing the sport.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to make Tiger Woods more embarrassed than he already is.
Okay, these are the true ones. If he gets addicted to a drug, everyone else does too. He once fell off a horse. He was afraid of becoming addicted to painkillers. So he had members of his staff inject daily with the same dosages he had to take. So he wouldn't, if he got hooked, he wouldn't be the only one. He'd have a bunch of other drug addicts apparently taking.
That's how I got Lindsay Lohan hooked. Now she comes to me all the time for her medicine.
He once kidnapped a prominent film director to film a Godzilla ripoff for him.
And that's true.
That is true.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Then I didn't go away to Austria for location scouting. Oh, that was dumb. I got the extradition treaty with Austria. Crap.
This doesn't seem so progressive. He once had disabled and short people deported from his capital. In preparation for a festival, he had disabled residents removed from Pyongyang. The government also distributed pamphlets advertising a wonder drug would increase the height of short people. Those who responded to the pamphlets were sent away to different uninhabited islands, along with the disabled, in an attempt to rid the next generation of their supposedly substandard genes.
I had Randy Newman write our national anthem. Short people got no business being a People Republic of North Korea.
Number two, at one time he was the world's biggest buyer of Hennessy. This is true, confirmed by Hennessy, that he spent $600,000 to $850,000 annually on a Hennessy liqueur.
And who was his crap? Hennessy only.
I thought he liked that. What's the other one? The Herrmann. What's the other one he drinks?
Scotch.
Yeah.
Lagavulin.
Yes, that's the
from
one.
From Scotland.
And the number one fact about Kim Jong-il, he maintains a city that was built just to be looked at. It has no actual residents, but an extensive effort has been put forth to simulate a functioning city, including lights set on timers, street sweepers to create an illusion of activity. The use of modern telescopes has revealed that some units lack window glass. Some buildings are just concrete shells that don't even have interior rooms.
Well, that's like every building in North Korea.
Wow. Sounds like New York. Oh, come on. I'm not. I'm kid. I kid Calcutta.
And I made
today.
I made North Korean soccer team beat Portugal 7-0.
Yes.
No, wait, other way around. Crap.
And also, Pyongyang has a functioning subway system, and, you know, the trains run and everything, but nobody gets on the trains, because if you do, there's probably a 75% chance you'll be electrocuted.
Oh.
Yes.
It was built by KBR.
So if you're a gambling,
and had a bit.
If you're a gambling man.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, beautiful.
I know.
All right. Right. 17 minutes after the hour, back with we've got Right Wing World. We have comedian extraordinaire Sarah Benincasa, who has a new column at Wonkette, and much more as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Remember, you heard it on this channel first.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Mm-hmm. 22 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1 to the phone number toll free from anywhere. Thad! Admiral Thad Allen, oh dear God, on the latest, I don't know, Jim, what is it, a mishap, a underwater robot knocked the cap off the oil well, and so we had more oil gushing out yesterday.
Events indicate that the problem was a remotely operated vehicle that had been around the lower marine riser package had bumped into one of those vents that allows the excess oil to come out. It actually closed it, thereby creating pressure in it and the backflow potentially up the water vent. They're checking the containment cap right now. If there are no hydrates in the containment cap, they will attempt to reinstall the containment cap and begin producing later on today. If there are hydrates, they will probably have to rerun the pipeline, and that will take a considerable amount longer.
This sort of thing has happened before, and it has always been due to human error. I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
All right, Ken Salazar, Interior Secretary.
With respect to the moratorium, I believe it was the correct decision. I believe it's a correct decision today, and with all due respect to the Honorable Court, we disagree with the court.
The Honorable Judge Conflict of Interest, is that who he's talking
about? Yeah, him.
That guy. Okay.
Also, there's a couple of guys who had accidents. Two contract workers will help them to clean up on the Gulf Coast. One guy killed by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And the other guy drowned in a swimming-related accident. That'll happen to guys who don't keep their mouths shut about certain things. Just saying.
I'm sorry. The accent kills me. I don't mean to laugh at the guys dying. I'm just
the Chicago guy impression.
Yes.
Yeah.
There could be a problem. They sort of
yeah, no, because I Chicago guy is shipping my car. He's actually a great guy. He's actually a great company. He felt really bad. Yeah, it's just that accident cracks me up.
There was a little problem. The truck burst into flames. And,
it was an accident.
Your car is like a big puddle there on the highway. But good thing you had carbonite.
But listen to those carbonite ads. That's probably a good idea.
Can you carbonite the bikes? Oh, too late.
All right. Representative Charlie Melikon, Democrat of Louisiana, calling on BP to indefinitely suspend giving bonuses to its top executives. That'd be a good idea. Yeah. And to use the money to assist Gulf residents instead. He sent a letter to, noting the $3 million bonus that, Tony Hayward got a $3 million bonus last year for his spectacular work.
Wow.
Would cover the salaries of 50 people who are out of work due to the disaster.
And meanwhile, there's toxic rain dropping in Mississippi. Killing crops and birds.
That's what I that's what I hear tell. Here's the did you see the on his official Twitter page? Joe Barton appeared to unapologize for the original apology and the misconstruction of the original misconstruing.
Wow.
He linked to an article of a website saying Joe Barton was right. So I think that technically constitutes a unapologizing for the apology.
Maybe they just use him as a human sponge to help clean up the oil spill.
Well, it's about that. By the way, only 18% of voters in Texas think BP deserved the apology Barton sent last week, as opposed to 65% who think it did not. Even Texans think he's an asshat. Only 21 have a favorable opinion of him in his home state of Texas. Meanwhile, 64% of Texans think Obama was right to ask BP to compensate victims of the oil spill.
Unfortunately, everyone who supports him is in his district. So he'll go back.
ABC News' Rick Klein tweeted, "If you're scoring at home, Joe Barton has now unapologized for apologizing for his apology."
Yeah. Here. But he'll be sent back to Congress because everyone in his district supports him.
Isn't that good news for America? Speaking of the rate and see, the president in the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, for the first time in the survey, more disapprove of his job performance than approve. For the first time in his presidency, more than 60% believe the country on the wrong track. The pollsters, both pollsters on both sides, said there's no way an American president is not going to see his job rating affected after these kind of events. The other pollster said these numbers aren't good, but they're far from awful. His approval rating stands at 45%.
You know what would help, I think? Getting us out of Afghanistan and Iraq and banning any future oil drilling in the Gulf.
I actually agree with you on that. The poll shows, here's BP, however, in contrast, has a 6% approval rating.
Oh.
I guess that includes what? Rand Paul, Joe Barton, who else?
That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, and that new spokes guy for BP.
Oh, yeah. In the history of the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, Saddam Hussein had a 3% approval rating. Fidel, so they're better than Saddam Hussein. Fidel Castro, 3%. Yasser Arafat, 4%. OJ, in double digits, at 11% approval rating.
Oh, geez.
Some people approve of that sort of thing, I guess. Philip Morris at 15%, you know.
Calling Philip Morris.
Republicans still appear to have the edge heading into November, but you know, I don't know about this big storyline. They're only 45%, 43%. That's not
huge, a wide margin,
right? And this is early, so I yeah, exactly.
That gives both Democrats and Republicans a lot of time to screw up and tilt things.
Listen, it gives Sharon Engel a lot more time to say things, which is. So, let's see. Her latest, did you see this? The teabagger favorite, Sharon Engel, in Nevada, she said in an interview with local Nevada affiliate that the country's unemployed are spoiled. And as a U.S. senator, she said, "I'm not in the business of creating jobs."
Oh, well.
I think maybe she should go back to her strategy of not speaking.
Yeah.
You're just spoiled and lazy.
No, don't speak. Don't speak. Don't speak. No. Silence. Silence. Don't speak.
Okay, you know, many times our friends on the right, it's the explanation of the apology that actually makes it worse. So Mike Huckabee has clarified that he's opposes gay rights because he is disgusted by gay sex. Which I don't know if that makes it better or not. He has responded
to
the controversy.
Has he tried it enough to be disgusted by it?
I mean, I get disgusted when
it's
I think...
It's an acquired taste, maybe. Try it.
I get disgusted when I think of him, Mike Huckabee and his wife having sex.
Yeah. and making more fat Huckabees, just saying. He's responded to the controversy in which he called gay relationships icky.
He needs to grow up.
Yeah, he said that this is not a term I created, so he's not responsible for it, the ick factor. He said that the gay community started the phrase the ick factor, so it's not him. Okay. Right. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
A town where everyone's got a story. I moved here because on a calculator, the zip code spells boobs.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Joined now by white hot comedian Sarah Benincasa, who is, listen, she's so busy, I don't even know where to start here. She is blogging for Wonkette. She also just started blogging for Comedy Central's IndecisionForever.com. And she has a show in Asheville, North Carolina, which is mama country.
Mm-hmm.
This Saturday, we go now to Sarah Benincasa. Hello, Sarah. Good morning.
Hey, thank you so much. I am white, and I am sometimes hot. So I appreciate that, Stephanie.
No worries. So tell us now, your new column is Barry, Can You Hear Me? What is
It's called Barry, Can You Hear Me? And first, before I tell you, I just have to say that hearing you talk about Mike Huckabee having sex with his wife really distracted me and vaguely aroused me. I just wanted
yeah.
to know that.
It's weird. I mean, I'm just saying he kind of have his nerve talking about gay sex has the ick factor. When you look at that postcard of the fat Huckabees, the Christmas card, I think that would prevent anybody gay or straight from having sex ever again.
I mean, I just don't want to hit that. And I don't feel bad about that. Mike Huckabee is reminiscent of, there's a sadistic bear in the new Toy Story 3 film. And Mike Huckabee is very much like the sadistic bear. No spoilers
yes.
here, but the bear's crazy.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
But anyway, the Wonkette column, it's really fun. It's called Barry, Can You Hear Me? And it's my weekly love letter to the greatest government leader in the history of leaders of governments, Mr. Barack Obama.
Yes. And you say there that you're pleased as Kenyan Hawaiian Punch to debut the new column.
I am, yes. It's very glorious. I mean, it's basically my way of communicating to him that I would make an excellent stepmother to his children and just showing him a lot of love, really. And also it's a good place to incoherently babble, which is the best part about Wonkette. There's a lot of hilarious, incoherent babbling
yes.
from liberal propagandists like myself.
Yes, I'm not saying you're getting ahead of yourself, but you do mention in the column, I think, that you spend much of your time knitting fuzzy sweaters for your future stepchildren, Malia and Sasha.
I do. Sometimes I knit. Sometimes I crochet. It really just depends on the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is that that's just part of the delusion, or it's just another hobby?
Another hobby, you know, I wouldn't call it a delusion. I'd call it a life plan. And that's really what I'm going for. You know, one of the commenters was funny because the whole concept of the column is that I'm so wildly in the tank for Obama that I've lost all perspective, which is really just my way of commenting on a part of myself, I think, and a part of a lot of folks who voted for Obama.
I get called an Obama apologist every day. I'm proud of it.
By people on your own staff.
Yes.
I actually have a poster of him in my bedroom that I'm looking at right now. It's sort of like Tiger Beat. It's a little upsetting that I have a poster of the man.
For political geek adults.
Exactly. And so I thought, you know, why not play up that part of myself and parody that part of myself and that part of so many of my friends and people I know and write a crazy column for editor and publisher Ken Lane, who lives in a bunker in California.
Yes. Now, what was I going to ask you? Oh, you are, of course, best known for your Sarah Palin vlogs on the Huffington Post, for which you got a Webby nomination, I might add.
I lost to Isabella Rossellini. Thank you very much, Isabella.
Wow.
Hello.
If you're going to lose to someone, Isabella Rossellini isn't a bad one to lose to, though.
That's true. That's true. I've heard she is known to be kind of good at acting, so I'll accept that for now.
So you've actually performed as Palin, like at the New Yorker Festival and whatever. Did you have to study it like a dialect? Because the kind of word salad that she speaks is not really English exactly, is it?
No, it's sort of a pidgin language. It's sort of a Creole patois, in a sense, of English and then what is actually, whatever's happening in her brain that day. I love Tina Fey's impression of Sarah Palin because it's fantastic. It's also so much more technically accurate than mine. Like, hers just really, really nails it. I remember in 2008, my comedy partner Diana Fias and I just sort of made up what we thought she should be like and what we thought she should sound like. And then quite often she actually would end up doing and sounding things that we had in our wildest dreams thought, oh no, this is just comedy. Comedy is exaggeration. And then she would actually do it.
Yeah, yeah. We actually did that years ago during the impeachment. We wildly imagined what Linda Tripp and Monica Lewinsky sounded like on the tapes, and then when they came out, it was pretty close.
Oh, Linda Tripp, there's another ick factor, you know? She and Mike Huckabee could just get down, film it, put it online. I would pay nothing for it.
Yeah. Now, Jim Ward plays the role of Sarah Palin on our show, and you know, it's kind of hard to tell, because I think, Jim, she actually did say one time, also too, in addition.
Moreover.
Yeah.
I forgot all the rest of the synonyms for it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a Scrabble board has exploded sometimes when she speaks, isn't it? It's just, what, is that even... You know,
it's beautiful, dissociative from reality. Like, you don't know if she's with us or if she's on another plane of existence. I think she's the reincarnation of Jesus, and sometimes her message of love and peace and hatred for people who are different just gets a little bit garbled in the translation. I'm pretty sure she's actually a holy being in some way, and I worship her as a god.
So that's actually an Aramaic accent she has. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's vaguely Aramaic. It's a little Hebe, but it's vaguely Aramaic.
It needs to be translated by Mel Gibson, really, for you to understand it. Yeah.
Doesn't everything, you guys? Wouldn't everything be better if Mel Gibson just told us the news and how to feel and think every day?
I hear he's studying hypnotism.
I have heard that.
You won't believe that the Jews killed Jesus. You will believe that they started all the wars in the world.
I'm Italian. I always blame the Italians for killing Jesus, actually. The Romans. Specifically. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Sarah, what will you be talking about in your show? Is it Saturday night in Asheville, North Carolina, which is, listen, it's Mama and Obama country down there.
Oh, I love it there. I used to live there. I lived there for a couple of years, and it still feels like home to me.
Awesome city.
It's so fantastic. It's so, you know, Asheville, if you can't throw, a box of organic quinoa without hitting a lesbian with a beautiful adopted child. My favorite thing about Asheville, just massage therapists and lesbians and children who come from all over the world. It's fantastic. I love it there.
She will be performing this Saturday in Asheville. SarahBenincasa.com is the website, and she's pretty much on every other website in the world, so I'm sure you'll find her. Sarah, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for taking time for us.
Thank you so much, Stephanie and Jim and everybody. Have a great day.
All right, you too. There she goes, Sarah Benincasa, the hilarious.
Yay!
Speaking of hilarious, by the by, did you see the latest on Rod Blagojevich?
Oh, yeah.
Perchance?
Yes.
He was looking for a, quote, good gig in exchange for Barack Obama's Senate seat, even proposing that he, on a FBI tape, that he become the next U.N. ambassador.
Yeah, I think he'd be great at that.
On one of the tapes, he said the objective of shopping around the Senate seat is to get a good gig in Washington. He said, I'd like to get the out of here. I don't think diplomats normally drop as many F-bombs as Rod Blagojevich does, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure Madeline...
I want to be a diplomat.
I'm sure Madeline Albright has dropped a few.
Translate that, you bastard.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, let's dive into the right-wing world and see what's doing, shall we, kids? 43 minutes after the hour, and here we are. It's late to get to right-wing world.
Yeah.
John Stossel on the O'Reilly. Wow, there's the other BP defender in the crowd. There
I object to President Obama, the president of the country, saying, I will meet with the chairman and inform him that he is to set aside this money. That is a shakedown.
Because
this is
mad. We're
thuggish
mad.
Chicago
thuggish.
Shakedown. This
I'll tell you what.
Vladimir Obama.
If it were me, I would have been in there. Did you ever see the movie The Untouchables with Robert De Niro as Al Capone with the baseball bat? And he goes,
Vladimir
that would have been me.
Vladimir
I would have brought
Putin
the base.
O'Reilly.
Yeah, you bet.
Hmm. Yeah. Wait a minute. It's a Putin and Chicago. It's a Russian Chicago style shakedown.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Except he's actually, Serbian? Croatian? One of those
guys.
Yes. One of those guys. Yes. Used to be just Yugoslavia, now it's all complicated.
All right. Brain Trust Gretchen Carlson on the Fox and Freaks.
To me, this is what being president of the United States is all about. It's these tough, huge, monumental decisions. It's not about how you run a campaign. It's not about whether or not you're popular. It's not about whether or not you're a celebrity or you're good-looking or tall or short. It's in a time of crisis making these executive decisions. It's just like our job.
Right.
What?
The president has a really hard job, just like mine. Reading the teleprompter and
really
getting my hair done.
Looking pretty.
What tough
decision? She did not. Oh, no, she didn't. Yes. She said it's just like our job on Fox.
Yeah.
And she said it
with
a straight
face. Being
leader
of the free world. Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
I can only imagine the monumental decisions, Jim, that must be made every day by the Fox and Freaks that impact, you know,
heels
something.
Or flats.
I don't think Brian Kilmeade has the brain power to make any kind of decision.
Should I compare the president to Stalin or Hitler today? I have decisions.
Okay. Wow. All right. Let's pause briefly, shall we? 45. I'm putting a moratorium on right-wing world briefly while we discover what's gone wrong so far.
Well, Gretchen Carlson is wrong.
45 minutes after the hour, back with more right-wing world as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
More fun than a barrel of monkeys. Moron.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. See, get it? Move this? Because you're moving today?
Moving back to LA today,
It's about 50 time.
So I'll be able to spend much more time with you. I'm so excited.
Yay.
50 minutes after the hour. I love you,
You can throw things at us now.
Yeah.
Exactly. I can go back to throwing things. It just doesn't work on Skype.
And
I keep breaking my computer.
Yeah, those stapler-shaped bruises have just healed. Damn it.
All right. By the way, John Fugelsang will join us all live in studio in L.A. tomorrow, plus Christian Weller, economist extraordinaire, former CIA operative Barry Eisler. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yes. So a big, big show tomorrow. Mama on an hour of sleep with a broken foot. It'll be bitchy and funny. Tune in, won't you?
And don't forget your building card this time.
Oh, that's right. That's somewhere.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Stephanie in Madison.
Oh, no.
Listen, I've got to get 3,000 miles with a dog, a bunch of luggage, and a broken foot. Stephanie in Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Steppy.
Hey, Steph. Good luck with that move and your new peg leg.
Thanks.
Hal is awesome on The View. I
know
I missed your show, but I've had to go back and forth. And when he's on, he's just been so funny, except for he made one kind of bad joke about the massage lady with Gore being old. And everybody was like, ah, you know, a bunch of women. So,
chicks are so sensitive.
Yes, I know, and I got it. So it's not that big of a deal. But anyway.
Cool. Awesome, honey. Thank you. All righty. Let's finish up the right-wing world. Glenn Beck on the radio on the McChrystal resignation.
General McChrystal is looks like he's going to be tendering his resignation. If I were the president of the United States, I, of course, would accept it. However, if I were this president of the United States, what I would do is say, so I'm going to go ahead and send him back to Afghanistan. Because it gives the president a chance to look like he's got forgiveness in his heart. Look, I'm... People say that I'm thin-skinned. No, I can forgive him.
What?
I don't know.
What? What are you?
Who says the president's thin-skinned?
Nobody does. Nobody.
Yeah. If anything, it's the opposite he's they're saying. Right? That he's so cool. He's a Vulcan of some sort.
Glenn Beck's a douche.
You think? Mm-hmm. Michael.
I think he
has
a thin skin. He takes things very personally and cries at the drop of a hat. Oh, wait, that's me.
Okay, Michael Savage.
The phony liberals who said that during Hitler's period, if only the generals had stood up to Hitler and said something, the Holocaust could have been prevented. And now we have a general standing up and saying the most mild of things about this thin-skinned community organizing, Marxist, backstabbing, anti-American, and all of a sudden he's fired and they say, good for Obama. Good for Obama.
I see. So he's a general that's standing up to Hitler.
Yeah.
Really. Obama, Hitler. Mm-hmm. Wow. He's gotten a little extra crazy since last we...
Is he a comedian? Is he punking us? He has to be. Nobody's that crazy.
I think he's genuinely nuts. I think he was so hurt by Allen Ginsberg leaving him. And now...
We often ask about our right-wing friends, is the lunacy feigned or real? Feigned or real? Drug-addled gas bag Rush Limbaugh on the...
McChrystal, nobody knows. Obama's really stringing this out to distract from all the negative economic news that's out there. Sales of new homes in May plunged 33%. You couple that with existing home sales plummeting. And I don't know why anybody would say this is unexpected. New home sales plunge 33%.
There was just a report on CNN that the job prospects are looking better.
Also, is it me? Obama drew out the McChrystal thing because, yes, it was a day, wasn't it, since it was reported to when he was...
You're fired.
And he did certainly did draw that out. And
he had to travel from Afghanistan.
The transporter beam to get him from Afghanistan back.
He's
drawing it out, obviously.
Exactly.
Being a Vulcan, he should know how to do that.
Yes. Okay. Charles Krauthammer on the Brit Bear.
The fact that Salazar is sticking with this and that they're going to appeal and they're going to hang in there on this, I think is a measure of how much this administration is in hock to its ecological left. These people are not going to let him go. They blame the Obama administration for the small opening on drilling, which it did before the Gulf oil disaster, and this is the price that they are exacting. I think it's a big mistake. Not just from an engineering perspective or an economic. I think it's a big political mistake.
What?
Salazar's was the one pushing for all the new drilling. And now he's too...
He's
Obama's
a crazy environmentalist.
Yes,
okay. All right, that concludes a right-wing world. I found that puzzling and disturbing.
Yeah, think how puzzling you'll find tomorrow's right-wing world when you're on an hour of sleep.
Fox Websites asks if Obama, not CEO Tony Hayward, should resign for BP's negligence.
Huh?
Well,
computer says no.
No, but thanks for your...
Hayward should resign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to see Salazar resign, but that's just me.
Oh, I feel better suddenly about the oil spill, Jim. Tony Hayward has pulled out of a public appearance at an oil conference at the last minute to focus on the Gulf of Mexico relief app. Oh, good. He's
sure
focused
is.
Now.
Yeah.
So now... Things should be. That's probably what caused that robotic arm to knock the cap off, because Tony Hayward was probably in charge again on the job.
If, as a lot of people suspect, the oil well casing is broken and oil is leaking out all over the place, actually letting it leak out the pipe in the short term is probably somewhat better because it relieves some of the stress down below. But it's all bad.
Yeah.
There's nothing good.
Yeah, by the way, that's the line Al Gore used, apparently, to the masseuse. Oh, I kid. That story's made up. Come on. I love the part about she tried to distract him with chocolates. Look over there, chocolates. And apparently he went for it. Oh, I love chocolates. Guess what one of our fiscal conservative friends has done?
What?
After blaming Dems for spending money we don't have, Marco.
Rubio.
Faces foreclosure on a house he can't afford. Oh, got in over his head a little, did he? Facing foreclosure on a Tallahassee home he co-owns with another Florida state lawmaker. What's that about? The
That's odd.
David Riviera. The duo stopped making payments in February after a dispute about the amount once the interest-only period ended. Rubio's campaign has claimed the issue has been resolved.
I think there may be some other kind of dispute there.
Wait a minute.
I just hey, get an impression.
What is the story really about? Yeah, the foreclosure process apparently has not been halted. However, documents show it is still going forward. So that's the kind of fiscal conservatives that you're talking about. All right, that's it for me, and best of luck to me. On the
yeah, good luck to you.
The way this week is going.
Yeah, we may or may not see you tomorrow. Who can say?
Who can say? I bet you there's a betting pool on the live blog. All right, Fred and I flying back to L.A. today. We will see you live in studio tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.